They overwhelm you with their work. They overwhelm you with pressure.
Should they score?
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We put the Crosby score.
You give them 20 minutes of room where they can make a bleed for it, and we did.
If he doesn't sign with Winnipeg Jets in the next couple of weeks, no player will be more coveted.
Dustin Byfuglien posted it in. It's a rocket of a shot.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Olofsson quickly ahead to Polkinen. They're making a change. There's room for Polkinen. Polkinen shoots. He scores. Teemu Polkinen in overtime. Iowa wins 1-0. And it's 2 points to Iowa, 1 to Manitoba.
As you just heard on this fine radio station, Mitch Peacock with the call, the Iowa Wild defeating the Manitoba Moose 1-0 in overtime, a scoreless 60 minutes of regulation decided on that Teemu Polkinen goal as the Wild defeat the Moose 1-0. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at tsn1290.ca, we welcome you to NHL This Week. A little hockey talk, late night hockey talk. Things going to get a little wild and crazy here as we'll be with you right up until the stroke of midnight here on TSN 1290. Go ahead, Ez.
Well, I was going to say it's a good thing we have lots of coffee here for Joel because, you know, we're going to be done the show after midnight.
So. I'm not worried about Joel. Joel's a night owl. Joel's out on the town. He's talking to the ladies until the wee hours. This is well past my bedtime, let me tell you. I was driving here, you know, to get to the station. I was driving around 9:30. I'm thinking to myself, why are all these cars on the road? Where are all these people going? I'm not used to being out at this late hour. The only time I haven't been out at this late hour, unless I've been going to a Jets game in God knows how long.
What actually is your shut-eye time?
Normally, I will be up in, if there's no NFL football on or no, you know, real, you know, sporting event keeping me awake, I'm in bed by 10:15 at the latest or so, asleep by about 10:45.
That's the routine?
That's the routine. I mean, usually, now, if there's a Jets game, of course, it's later. If there's an NFL game on, you know, I'm up until the end of the game, and then, you know, I might push the clock to, sure, you know, 11 o'clock, maybe even 11:15. So you guys might need to tase me a little bit around 11:30 to make sure I'm still going strong.
Joel, Drew's on, like, the Del Boca Vista schedule,
yeah,
you know?
Hey.
He gets up at 6 a.m.,
yeah,
has a little, you know, mid-morning nap at 11, gets back up at 2, has his dinner at 5, and bed by 7.
I think most parents that are listening or those who have young children may be able to understand and commiserate with my schedule, which admittedly is somewhat similar to a senior citizen's, but c'est la vie, as the case may be right now. But I'm sure at some point in my life later on, when Aaron's a little bit older, I'll be able to stay up until the wee hours of 11 or 11:30.
I don't know about you guys. I don't know if it's because of the first snowfall last night or the fact that it starts to get dark around 4:30 this time of year,
yeah,
but it feels extra late right now. Like, it might as well be like 1 in the morning, but
oh, yeah,
it doesn't matter. We're here, Drew. We're going to talk some hockey. We're going to talk a little Moose. Unfortunately,
yeah,
they didn't pick up the win, but Mitch Peacock doing a great job there with Derek Meach doing a little color, and, you know, they played well. Had a bit of a tough road trip there, but they're still doing okay, and they're going to get some players back pretty soon. They've obviously lost a lot of players, you know, up to the Winnipeg Jets because of all of the injuries, but, you know, certainly tonight's game could have gone either way.
Well, as you were there.
Yep.
And, you know, when somebody says, oh, it's a 0-0 game going into overtime, it's a goaltender's duo, some people may think, oh, this is a snoozer. Certainly not a snoozer, was it?
No, it wasn't. And, you know, you saw a fight in the first period, pardon me, second period. Cale Kessie dropped the gloves there. Eric Comrie was phenomenal. Iowa had 20 shots there in the second period.
Leonard Larceny.
There was a few power plays. I think the Moose and Wild each had 3. So there were some shots and, you know, there's some good scoring chances. But, you know, it certainly wasn't a boring scoreless game. And, you know, they get the point there in Iowa. Gets the extra point with Polkinen getting the goal. But, you know, certainly the Moose, in my opinion, have been a lot better this year. And certainly, you know, the playoffs aren't out of the question for them.
No, especially as you said, as you know, and you mentioned it, Joel, given how, you know, call up and injury riddled the Moose have been. Would they say 7 regulars out of their lineup, 7 guys they expected to be contributors to their team this season? Lots up with the Jets, and then, of course, Scott Kozmichuk and Anthony Peluso both on the injured list. So for the Moose, you know, no surprise that they're having trouble putting the puck in the net, but they at least get the 1 point. in taking the Wild to overtime.
Yeah, and this is when you want to start collecting some W's, because so far they've had a Pacific Division heavy schedule, but now they're back home, Iowa for two. They face each other to lead off the season, split that one, but nine of their next dozen is going to be against the Central Division. So this is when you want to start maybe, you know, creating some steps in the standings. But like you touched on, when you're minus seven regulars right now, a couple of injuries, not to mention Kopp, DeLeo, Patan, Dano.
Yeah.
Who else is up here?
Quinton Howden.
Quinton Howden, yeah. And Kosmachuk and Peluso are injured. So eventually you want to start getting some of these guys back. And I think that probably will happen with Stafford, you know, inching closer, and now Kyle Connor and Brian Little both listed as day-to-day.
As your first time, I believe I saw you tweet, the first time you've seen Jack Roslovic live, your impressions on his game, I mean, obviously didn't get on the score sheet with the Moose getting shut out, but your impressions on watching Jack Roslovic play for the Manitoba Moose tonight.
Yeah, he's got lots of speed and lots of skill, good hands. He had a couple of scoring chances, unable to obviously bury one, but I mean, two big observations tonight, guys, were that Eric Comrie and Jack Roslovic are not going to be in the AHL for very long. I wouldn't be surprised if Eric Comrie even gets a couple games with the Jets this year. Obviously, that depends on if the Jets feel like they'd like to see him this year and where the Jets are in the standings. But, I mean, Eric Comrie has been the clear-cut number one goaltender for this Moose team since Connor Hellebuyck was called up to the Winnipeg Jets last season. So he was fantastic. For my money, he was the number one star of the game, and Jack Roslovic was excellent playing on the top line with Scott Glennie. What else can you say here? I mean, the Jets got him, obviously, in the Evander Kane trade. At least the first-round pick turned into Jack Roslovic, and I remember, you know, debating it with you, Drew. I thought there was a good chance that he was going to play for the London Knights of the Ontario Hockey League and maybe compete for a Memorial Cup, but he certainly made the right choice, and he's not far off from being an NHL player.
Eric Comrie, you mentioned him, through nine starts with the Manitoba Moose this year, 4-4-1, so the record is average, but the goals against is 2.34, not bad. Save percentage of .923. There's a lot of people in the hockey world, guys who really study goaltenders and everything else, who say that Eric Comrie is actually the Jets' number one goaltending prospect, even better than Connor Hellebuyck, who has been sort of tabbed as the quote-unquote future. Eric Comrie is also quite highly thought of among hockey people, you know, especially those with a keen eye for goaltending.
And would that be false? I mean, really, last year's first game, his first season playing pro, what, did he lead the league in saves?
Well, the Moose last year,
I mean, he got peppered. He got peppered all season long, but, I mean, he got some great exposure. And already right now, when you say he's clear-cut the number one, as he, you know, you can probably make a case that he's one of the better goalies in the entire league right now. And this is only his second-year pro. And we've seen a lot of the elite goalies in the NHL spend a couple of years in the American Hockey League, Braden Holtby being one of them, or eventually when he got his call-up, never looked back. Carey Price won a Calder Cup. Jonathan Quick spent some time in the minors. So to your point, Drew, this might be very intentional by the Jets to kind of season him very carefully, almost bring him up when he's overripe.
And Jamie Phillips is doing really well in the East Coast Hockey League, Joel. So, I mean, the Jets are looking really good at the goaltender position. Obviously, Connor Hellebuyck has struggled a little bit, and so has Michael Hutchinson. But certainly, you know, the goalie pipeline for the Winnipeg Jets is looking very good, and that's awesome for the organization and fans.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's shift our focus now away from the Jets AHL franchise over to the NHL big club, the Winnipeg Jets, in the midst of their longest road trip of the season, the five-game Eastern swing so far. They're now into the Midwest swing, I suppose, being in, and Midwest and Mid-South, being in Minnesota and then in Nashville on Friday. 0-3 so far on the Eastern road trip. Losses in Philadelphia, where you could certainly make the argument they were the better of the two teams, but ran into a hot Steve Mason. A debacle in Boston on Saturday night, where they were quite outplayed, and then a hard-fought defeat to the Carolina Hurricanes. 0-3 so far. Your impressions of the road trip. Is this a team, from your perspective, that is both running out of gas right now, given the difficult schedule? And that's not an excuse for their play, but their schedule has been quite difficult in the month of November. And then the injuries, which they've been able to maintain and handle thus far, are really beginning to catch up to them, which would explain why they've only been able to get one goal per game in the last two contests.
Yeah, Drew, you can't mince words here. I mean, the road trip has been awful. it's been a disaster so far. They've lost all three games. I would say that if the Chicago game at home, the 4-0 victory at home against the Blackhawks, was the high point in the season, the Saturday loss to the Boston Bruins, in my opinion, was the low point of the season. They had 7 shots after 2 periods.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't come to play. And, I mean, sure, you could say that, you know, they're in the middle of the toughest part of the schedule. But, I mean, these are games that you got to get up for. And the Boston Bruins won that game easily. And, sure, the effort was better against the Carolina Hurricanes. But, you know, you give up 7 power plays.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're not going to win many hockey games when you take that many penalties. And they weren't much better. I mean, you know, the effort level was certainly better.
Mm-hmm.
And it couldn't have been worse because, you know, Paul Maurice was pretty clear after the game, taking all of the blame, you know, trying to kind of, you know, take it away from
his team. Deflecting the attention
sure.
from the players.
But, I mean, that was, they just couldn't get anything going. I mean, they couldn't put together 2 passes against the Boston Bruins. So far, it's been a really poor road trip for the Winnipeg Jets, and you've got 2 games left here, and you got to win both of them because you can't come back home with no points or 2 points on a 5-game road trip. Right now, they've played the most games in the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're still, you know, tied for that last playoff spot with the Minnesota Wild, but, I mean, these are crucial games, guys. Central Division opponents, and you're going to get face the Predators again when you come home, so you've got the Predators back-to-back. I mean, you've got to start, you know, putting some points back on the board. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was very discouraging to watch how the Jets played against the Bruins and the Hurricanes, because I actually thought that, you know, the game against the Philadelphia Flyers, they played really well. I thought Steve Mason was really the difference in that game. I thought he stole the game. Connor Hellebuyck didn't play well, and Steve Mason was really good. So, I mean,
yeah,
they got to be better.
I don't think he stole the game, but based on what you're saying, between Boston and Chicago, basically from dazzling to disappointing on any given night. But when you consider how many players have been extracted from this lineup with injuries, what were we expecting in November? I mean, right now they're a game below 500. Are they surviving this month considering all the injuries? Are they technically surviving right now?
They are treading water, I would say. Now, treading water, but the water might be getting up towards their eyebrows right now, whereas before it might have been at their chin.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I think they would be drowning at that point.
I mean,
drowning at that point. And if things go poorly tomorrow and then Friday, well, then they might officially be drowning at that point in time, having played the most games in the Western Conference, and all of a sudden you're on a 5-game losing streak.
And then it'll be turned back the clock to last November when they got outscored, 24-8 during that 5-game swing, and then the wheels just completely fell off after that. They only won 4 games in November and never really seemed to recuperate from there. But at this point, considering the guys that they've lost,
yeah,
what were we expecting?
Yeah,
I mean, you're going to get the ebb and flow of a young team like that. They're going to be hot one night, the goalie is going to be good, and then the next night at Philadelphia, you know, Dustin Byfuglien gets his first goal of the year, they're on the board, it's 2-1, then all of a sudden a stinker goes in past Hellebuyck, a 61-footer from Mark Streit. And then they get a day off, you think they're going to bounce back at Boston, and they just lay an egg. A dozen shots, 3 shots in the entire second period, and they were only on the power play. I mean, there's no excuse for that.
And Joel, you know they're going to be fresher against the Minnesota Wild. With the day of rest yesterday and the practice today, you just know that they're going to be re-energized. But, I mean, I agree with you, Joel. Perhaps, you know, the expectations were unfairly raised after those wins at home against the Kings and the Blackhawks. But certainly their performance on the road has got to be better. Injuries or no injuries, I mean, you got to put up more than 12 shots against the Boston Bruins team that, even though, you know, they might be stingy and a tough team to play against, they got to be better. So they have 2 important road games coming up to end this road trip. And, you know, in my opinion, you got to get at least 3 or 4 points here, or this road trip could be, you know, a huge negative turning point in the season when you were playing so well at home and you were second in the Central Division. But now, you know, you look at the Minnesota Wild, who they're playing tomorrow night, Drew, and they're tied in points, but Minnesota has 3 games in hand. So, I mean, they're going to make those games up eventually. And, you know, we said at the beginning of the year, the Wild were going to be one of those teams that the Jets were competing with. Right now, I mean, with the exception of Chicago, no team has really run away here in the Central.
No.
St. Louis is starting to play a little bit better, but certainly the Jets are going to be fighting and clawing for the playoff spot right up until the end, but they got to be better. I mean, I think it's pretty simple. I mean, I think they can be better, and they're going to get some healthy bodies back here. Drew Stafford will probably play tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not getting some of those bodies back. Brian Little, Joel Armia, Tyler Myers, those guys aren't playing tomorrow. Yeah. So you got to persevere and find a way to win.
Hold your thoughts on this topic, Joel. When we come back, we'll preview tomorrow night against the Minnesota Wild and Friday against the Nashville Predators. Two key Central Division matchups coming up for the Winnipeg Jets. We'll talk about them next. You're listening to a late-night edition of NHL This Week on TSN 1290.
This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Poyville in a backhander goal. Stop. Rebound in front. Jumped there by Niederreiter. Stopped by Hellebuck. Here's Parisi on the far side. Moving and shooting. And it's clubbed down by Hellebuck. 5 seconds to go. You can get on your feet back home and bring this one home. A Black Friday is a sunny Friday. The Winnipeg Jets hang on and win in St. Paul, Minnesota. 3-1, beating the Wild here this afternoon.
Almost 1 year ago to the day, Connor Hellebuck getting his first career NHL win in Minnesota as the Jets and the Wild did battle last Black Friday. Instead of it being on Black Friday this year, it is on Thanksgiving Eve, tomorrow evening, as the Jets and the Wild do battle, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Gentlemen, we were talking about the disappointing road trip in the last segment, because admittedly, very disappointing, 0-3 so far. You have these two games to wrap up the road trip against Central Division opponents, and we know just how important holding court and holding serve is in division. If the Jets can win these two games against the Predators and against the Wild, and they take care of their business in division, does it take away the stink of the first three games of the road trip against the Flyers, Bruins, and Hurricanes?
Absolutely, I would say. And plus, going back to that mini game Black Friday last year, I think that I remember thinking that was probably their most complete game, at least in the opening half. I think they only gave up 15 shots that game when Hellebuck got that shutout. I mean, that was a very – they stymied the opposition. And that's what you like to see into this road trip. We were just talking off air how they haven't really played that game where they're not giving you an inch, skating all night and creating opportunities by creating turnovers and, you know, plugging up the neutral zone and gap control and winning the puck battles and negating icings, all that stuff that's based on speed. So maybe after having yesterday, you know, a day to relax and then back and regroup, a practice day today, work on the power play, which hasn't looked great, you know, so far in the swing.
So far in the last 5 years, I would say. But yeah, you're right about that.
And try to, you know, this Wild team that's only collected 7 out of a possible 18 points this month and not putting the puck in the net, maybe you can catch them off guard tomorrow, you know, feel good about yourself, and then go into the conclusion of this swing at Nashville and try to salvage at least a couple of games, because even going into it, Paul Maurice said, we want to at least come home feeling good about our game. I'm not going to evaluate the result, but more so how we're reacting, what we're doing, how we're adjusting. So, you know, this trip is still salvageable in that sense, but it certainly will have to start with a better effort than what we've seen.
Yeah, Joel, and whether you get 0 points, 2 points, 3 points, 4 points in the next couple of games at Minnesota and at Nashville, you got to start playing well. I think that's more important, and they just have not played well in these last two games. The Philadelphia game, I didn't have a problem with the way the Jets played. I thought they had pressure on the puck. I thought that they generated scoring chances. They could have had two or three more goals easily, and Patrick Laine had a good chance early. Steve Mason made the big glove save. Mm-hmm. Nikolai Ehlers had that breakaway, if you guys remember from last week. So they had their chances. And, you know, to Joel's point, Minnesota doesn't give you much. They've allowed the fewest goals in the NHL at 35, which is unbelievable.
It's a Bruce Boudreau hockey team. He doesn't give up any goals. Well, it's what he did in Anaheim.
But
last
usually
year.
They're better offensively.
But even going back
to the
Ducks
weren't good offensively last year, though.
But yeah. Drew, going back to the Mike Yeo Minnesota Wild, they this team defensive. Does not give you a lot. And you know, we've seen some amazing battles between these two teams. We see a lot of one goal games between these two teams. So they've got to be better defensively. They've got to put more pressure on the puck. And you know, to Joel's point about last year, year's game and earlier in the season when the Jets lost, I think it was the second game of the year.
Second game of the year.
After Carolina, after that overtime win.
Yeah, I think it was a 4-3 defeat, if I recall correctly, on the first Saturday of the NHL season.
And the Wild are getting back Marco Scandella, who has missed some time due to injury. And we know how good Ryan Suter is and how good that D group is and how well Devin Dubnyk has been playing early on this season. So they've got to be better. They've got to start playing the way that they were playing before they went on this road trip. And I realize, Drew, that, you know, the injuries, you know, have been tough and the travel schedule has been absolutely ridiculous. You know, maybe we can talk about that, you know, later in the show or on Saturday's show. But with the World Cup, you know, and this condensed schedule, it's pretty ridiculous. But you can't use that as an excuse. The schedule is what it is, and you've got to get points here because, you know, the Jets have played more games than a team like the Wild and most other teams in the Western Conference, and you got to get some points here. You got to start feeling better, and you've got to be better on both sides of the puck.
Well, you mentioned the Minnesota Wild don't have much offensively, and that is borne out in if you look at the statistics. Eric Staal, who of course was their offseason signing, their key offseason signing, leads the team with 13 points. 5 goals, 8 assists. Ryan Suter also has 13 points, 4 goals, 9 assists. Charlie Coyle and Nino Niederreiter match Eric Staal with 5 goals apiece. They're just not a team. They're not a team that is going to light things up offensively. They score very few goals. 19th overall in the NHL. But as you mentioned, and as Bruce Boudreau, their head coach's MO is, very good at goals against. First in the league in terms of goals given up so far this season. And that's going to be a challenge for the Winnipeg Jets team. It's a different kind of game. Although it's a different kind of game, but not really, because they played Boston on Saturday. Another team that keeps things very tight checking. Doesn't score a lot. The Bruins don't. You know, they don't give up a lot. The Bruins don't. So there are some similarities there in how both teams like to keep things very tight-checking and very close-knit, and the Jets had trouble with that on Saturday night.
But what's going on with the Wild right now is a little bizarre. I mean, there's a lot of skill on that team, but no scoring. I mean, Koivu, 1 in his last 11. Pominville, he's got 1 in his last 7. Granlund, took him 9 games to find the back of the net once. I mean, Halla, he's been hurt, but he only has 2 on the year, so that's the kind of step where eventually they're going to bust out of it. Eric Staal, you know, when you want to talk about good off-season signings, he's certainly been one of the better ones so far just based on what he's been able to produce for this team. They're not generating a lot from the middle, you know. So their center iceman, there's no thrust coming from their center iceman, so now their wingers are almost left in an island, so they're not able to move up the ice properly and then generate some offense. So I'm not sure if that's maybe because they've been minus Parise for a few games. Is he healthy right now, by the way?
I'm going to have to double-check on that. Yeah, I believe he is expected to be in the lineup tomorrow, so I think he is back to being
healthy.
So
that's an extra boost there, extra skill in the power play for sure. So you don't want to give this kind of team the opportunity to bust out of some slumps, and you do that by certainly staying out of the box, which they weren't able to do on Sunday at Carolina when they took 9 minor penalties, season high for them.
Yeah, Joel, and this, as you said, this team is really depending on balanced scoring right now. They don't have anybody that's really driving the bus like the Winnipeg Jets do with the Patrick Laine, Nikolaj Ehlers, Mark Scheifele line. So as you mentioned, you know, Eric Staal surprisingly is leading the team in scoring, but you know, guys like Mikael Granlund, Mikko Koivu, Jason Pominville, these types of players, they're having decent seasons, but definitely not putting up top offensive numbers, especially as compared to the Winnipeg Jets. They're getting really good goaltending. I mean, Devin Dubnyk right now is having a Vezina type of season.
7 wins, 4 shutouts.
He's been excellent. And, you know, I think the Winnipeg Jets, you know, they're going to get Drew Stafford back.
Expected,
and whether he goes on the second line or the third line, that's going to be a boost. That's fresh legs. And I think, you know, that's important, guys, when you've lost 3 games on the road and you've got some tired legs. Mm-hmm. So that's going to give them a boost. And, you know, I think that the Winnipeg Jets can take advantage of a Minnesota Wild defense. And sure, Ryan Suter and Jared Spurgeon is an excellent top pair, and Jonas Brodin is a great defenseman. But guys like Mike Riley and Matt Dumba, that's not an excellent defensive pair. A couple of young defensemen, they're better offensively than defensively. So if you can get some good matchups there, even though you don't have last change, I mean, the Jets, this is a team that they can beat. I mean, the Jets, if they play well, they can beat any team. We saw them beat Chicago, who is the hottest team in the NHL. So, you know, the Minnesota Wild, very good defensively. You know, they have to be very tight defensively. And hey, another point, Drew, they got to get a dirty win here. I mean, I thought that they were trying to be too fancy against the Carolina Hurricanes, who, by the way, are a very underrated team. You know, you look at Columbus right now. I'd put Carolina up there in the East as far as a team that's really surpassed my expectations early on. They're not an easy team to play against. No. You look at how they are in the penalty kill.
And they weren't an easy team to play against last year because Bill Peters gets as much out of his group as he can.
The old Bobcock disciple, right?
Yeah, exactly. He's going to squeeze every last ounce of talent out of a team that might be a little bit bereft of it or still another year or two away from hitting their full stride. Yep. But to your point about the game tomorrow, as you're absolutely right, the Minnesota Wild are... If the Jets, I think the first goal, I mean, it's a cliche that the first goal is important in every game, but against a team like the Wild who don't score a lot themselves, for the Jets, if they can come out and get an early goal or the opening goal at that point in time, it puts extra pressure on the Wild because they're a team that would say, look, we're not offensively inclined. We're not tremendous offensively at any point in time, never mind when we're chasing the game a little bit.
And more than that, it makes them feel good about themselves.
The Jets.
You know, because they've been chasing these games. They're always chasing, and that's why... And these penalties ensue. Sometimes you're chasing the game and you're trying to get back into it. Then, you know, some of these guys play a little more minutes than they should be playing. So maybe they get that opening goal and they start feeling better about themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, we always say that excitement outweighs intimidation. But now that some of these kids have had a taste of the NHL, maybe they are a little bit more intimidated when they are falling behind in the game. Because, you know, you can't always be the cardiac kids like what we saw against Carolina and Toronto in the early portion of the season. You're not going to come back every single time. So when the Jets always talk about how, you know, it's about us, it's about playing our game, well, in this case, that's what they have to do. They have to approach it and dictate the pace. They have to go out there and skate the Wild into the ground and try to take the game that way. If they still lose, well, at least they can say they gave it a better effort. But your point is, that greasy win, we probably haven't seen it since they manufactured that shutout win at Colorado there when Hutchinson, what did he make, 37 saves in that one? That was a greasy win where they're clogging up everything, even though a lot of shots made their way to Hutchinson. They just kind of, they grinded that one out all night.
And when you're, you know, coming off of a pair of games where you only scored two goals in those games and your power play is not going, I mean, you got to go to the net and you got to get some greasy goals, whether it's, you know, Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp playing on that second line or whether it's guys like Marco Dano and Brandon Tanev on the third line. I mean, not everybody can score the pretty goals like the Scheifele, Ehlers, Wheeler line. So, I mean, I think they got to really, you know, roll up their sleeves and be prepared, you know, to play an urgent game because they need to come out of this game with the 2 points. They're in the middle of their worst losing streak of the season, and these are crucial games, Drew. I realize you might say it's still early, but...
It's quarter of the way through the season. It's not early anymore. You're a quarter of the way through the
year. And these are divisional games.
And
they've been good in their division. Yes. They've beat Dallas twice. They've got 3 of 4 points against Colorado.
So far, they're 4-2-1 in their division.
Yep. And last year, 11-16-2, that was basically their undoing.
Right, so if you take care of business in division... With your next three games are all in division games. If you can take care of business for the most part in these next three games, the road trip is forgotten about and everybody's flying high because you're taking care of business in the division where those games are the most important. Quickly going to break, you mentioned just how important a greasy goal will be. It's going to be hard to score on Devan Dubnyk without any traffic in front. Don't expect pretty. His save percentage, .949 on the season, and his goals against average of 1.59. So the Winnipeg Jets going to have to get traffic in front of Devan Dubnyk to get one past him.
Well, and it's not going to get any easier against Pekka Rinne. Pekka Rinne is playing like the old Pekka Rinne. He's back from his short injury, and he's got a .933 save percentage and a goals against just over 2. So, I mean, 2 games against Pekka Rinne, don't expect to score too many goals unless you really earn them.
It's going to be a tough 3-game stretch for the Winnipeg Jets. Reminder, game time tomorrow in Minnesota. Early start, 6 p.m. Central. Coverage here, of course, on TSN 1290 all day long. Let's head to break. When we come back, we bring in the radio host from the Minnesota Wild, Kevin Faulness. He joins us next on NHL This Week, live on TSN 1290.
Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Half past 10, we welcome you back to NHL This Week with the Legal Curve Hockey here on TSN 1290.
This is some great workout music, by the way.
You can, you know, you can keep working out if you want there, Ezzy. Drew Mundell, Ezra Ginsberg, Joel Marcoux with you here in studio. You can follow us on Twitter, at Legal Curve, Facebook.com/Legal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is LegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Kevin Faulness. Kevin is the radio host for the Minnesota Wild. Kevin, good morning, or good afternoon, pardon me, good evening, and thanks for joining us.
Hello, my friends. I was going to say, what are you guys in Japan? I know Winnipeg's a little distant, but you're not in a different part of the hemisphere. Yeah. Out loud.
Kevin, just thanks for staying up for us.
Yeah, we really appreciate it, Kevin. I appreciate you joining us at this late hour. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Minnesota Wild. The Jets and Wild do battle in a pre-Thanksgiving game tomorrow in St. Paul. And you know, Kevin, you look at this Minnesota Wild team, and they certainly don't score a ton, but they don't give up any goals to speak of. Are they truly now 20 games into the season playing a Bruce Boudreau style of hockey?
I don't think so. I mean, first of all, they haven't had a full complement of players. Zach Parise's been in and out of the lineup. First dealt with quote unquote lower body injury, comes back from that, and then he's whacked with strep throat. So I mean, that's. You know, your number one guy has missed, what, 8-9 games now already this season. Marco Scandella has been on long-term injured reserve, most likely returns to the lineup tonight against your guys. And then Eric Holla missed a handful of games as well. So it's hard, I think, for Bruce Boudreau to put his, complete stamp on this team when he hasn't had his full complement of players at his disposal as of yet. But I guess in theory things are starting to go in that direction, but all you have to do is look at the box scores. You can tell that this is far from what Bruce Boudreau eventually wants to see.
Eric Staal's got 13 points in 18 games. He's tied for the team lead. How surprised are you that he's played so well so early on, and what has his veteran presence meant to this team? You know, the Stanley Cups, the experience with Canada at the international level. What does it mean? Was it meant for this team who's, as we've talked about, struggled offensively and is, still hovering around the 500 mark 20 games into the season?
Yeah, he's cooled off a little bit here lately, but as has the entire team. I think getting Parise back in the lineup and back on that top line with him and Coyle, I think will pay huge dividends probably for Staal and the rest of the team. But I'll tell you what, the team MVP through the first quarter of this season, without a doubt, is Devan Dubnyk. A close second from an offensive standpoint has been Eric Staal. And all I had been told is, first of all, I never watched him in Carolina, and you guys probably didn't either. I had heard that he had lost a step from the glory days when, he was hoisting a cup over his head coming out of that lockout. But I haven't seen that lost step. He looks spectacular. It started in training camp when he was keeping up with the young guys and, these conditioning drills that Boudreau and the staff were running these guys through, and it just hasn't stopped. Now, can he keep this up through the course of an 82-game season? I guess that remains to be seen, but I was told that they're getting damaged goods, and it just hasn't been the case. He's been right at home as the top pivot on that number one line and has not missed a beat in my eyes.
Far from what Bruce Boudreau wants to see, but Scott Stevens, on the other hand, is probably okay with the so far stout defensive play. Can you touch on what he's brought to this team so far?
Well, I think if nothing else, are you going to backtalk Scott Stevens? Because I don't think Ryan Suter's going to. And that goes right down the line from any of the, eight guys that they have at their disposal on the blue line. I mean, that was the one thing coming into this season that I think was glaring, that the depth of the blue line was going to be the strength of this team. And that certainly proved to be the case. Go along with Devan Dubnyk regaining his form from 2 years ago when he came on to the Minnesota Wild and basically lifted the team on his shoulders and got him into the playoffs. The defense, top to bottom, has been rock solid, and Ryan Suter has been playing his best hockey. They talk about, pairing his minutes back and all that stuff. It just hasn't happened because he's been playing so well, and I think he's definitely earned the trust and respect of Boudreau, Stevens, and the rest of the staff. But just having that veteran presence back there in Scott Stevens, I think it's been a calming influence. And that's not against, a Mike Yeo or a Daryl Sador or anyone who's manned that position in the past. But, I mean, come on, it's Scott Stevens. If he can't get your ear, and he can do it with a stare, it doesn't have to be with anything that he says, but when he speaks, it definitely carries a lot of weight.
You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290. Our guest is Kevin Faulness. He's the Minnesota Wild radio host. The Jets and the Wild do battle tomorrow evening in St. Paul. Kevin, you mentioned the MVP of the Wild so far has to be Devan Dubnyk. His numbers are Carey Price-ian, 949 save percentage, a 1.59 goals against average. We know just how good Dubnyk's been since he came over to the Minnesota Wild, sort of rebuilt his career almost out of nowhere a number of years ago. Why this year, you know, is he even more special so far with the, you know, the sub 1.6 goals against average?
Well, he's getting that team defense in front of him. When this team is playing well, I mean, he's getting one shot, stopping it, and then they're clearing the dust. There's not a lot of loose change to bang home, and so he's not having to, you know, be Dominic Hasek and they're flopping around in the crease. It's basically one save, and he's either smothering it or his defense as a core are getting it out of the way for him. I think that's part of it, but I'll tell you, I think he took a step backwards a little bit last year. Once he got that big contract, I think he – maybe even subconsciously, whatever. I just didn't feel like it was the same Devan Dubnyk that jumped on the stage back in January of, I guess it'd be 2014, and again got them into the playoffs that spring. Last year it wasn't that same Devan Dubnyk, but I think the Devan Dubnyk that we've seen through, I don't even know, 20 games, whatever it is, or 15 games that he's played, has been even better than the one that came to the Minnesota Wild that for that first stretch that was, you know, Vezina worthy. That should say a lot. He's seeing the puck. He's playing unbelievable hockey, and it's been a thing. I mean, at one point he had three straight shutouts. I mean, 180 minutes plus of a shutout hockey. It should tell you this guy is just playing out. You said Carey Price-ian like.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty good way to put it.
Kevin, Michael Russo reported earlier today that the Wild might get defenseman Marco Scandella back for tomorrow night's game against the Winnipeg Jets. And, of course, Marco Scandella has been on this Wild team for quite some time now. And, you know, he might not have had the offensive numbers that he wanted earlier in the season. But is it safe to say that he's going to give this Minnesota Wild team a boost? Because they haven't been getting a lot of offense from the defense this year.
Yeah, he's not the guy I would look to inject life back into the offense, but it can't hurt. I mean, he's definitely, I think you could make an argument he should be in your top four, you know, back there, and I don't think he'll start out that way. Looks like it's going to stay Suter and Spurgeon are going to be your top pairing. You're going to have Dumba and Brodin. No, it actually should be, that'll be interesting to see actually what they end up doing, because Brodin's actually been playing with Christian Follin. And I'll tell you this much, Christian Follin has found a soft spot in the heart of Bruce Boudreau. This guy was a healthy scratch, and I totally changed the subject. But Christian Follin, when Bruce Boudreau came to the Minnesota Wild, was a healthy scratch his first game and has risen in the ranks. At one point last week, the Wild had a 1-0 overtime win, I think was the one, where Dubnyk had the shutout, Granlund had the game-winning goal. But they ended up giving the star of the game to Christian Follin for what he did. It was against Boston. That's who it was. Because he stood up for Nino Niederreiter in taking out David Backes. And so it'll be interesting to see what they do with the pairings. But Marco Scandella, what he's done since coming onto the Minnesota Wild, has risen through the ranks, has done it, you know, paid his dues in the minors, can basically play with any of these guys, and is a nice stay-at-home defenseman that has that offensive punch from time to time, but I don't think that's necessarily his forte. It's more about the fact that he's a big body, and that's something that Bruce Boudreau and Scott Stevens covet from this defensive core when they can use it.
You touched on it earlier that this team has been devoid of its full complement of players for the better part of the season thus far. That aside, who needs to step it up?
Oh, name anyone. Right now, anyone. I mean, they've scored, you know, a handful of games and a handful of goals in the last few games, and really no one escapes culpability when it comes to the offensive punch. I mean, Mikko Koivu hasn't scored in I don't know how long. Nino Niederreiter, I guess, is he got one the other night, actually tied for the team lead in goals, but that number is 5. I mean, your guy has like 12, line 8. I mean, we don't have anyone even in that vicinity. So between Eric Staal, Nino Niederreiter, and maybe Mikael Granlund, that's where your offensive punch is coming from. But Chris Stewart, Jason Zucker, Jason Pominville, go right down the line. Any one of these guys need to step it up, because they don't have a guy like a Line that can go and take a game over by itself. It's got to be done by committee. And that's what this team was doing offensively early on this season. You look at, especially even during that shutout streak where they had scored 5 and 4 and another 4 and you know, scattered it like that, they were doing it by all 4 lines chipping in. Right now, it's few and far between, so I think they'd take it from just about anyone.
Kevin Faulness, our guest on NHL this week. We're discussing the Minnesota Wild ahead of the Jets Wild game tomorrow night in St. Paul. Kevin, you mentioned the team struggling for offense, yet they sent Joel Eriksson Ek back to Sweden. You know, he put up some decent numbers in his 9-game stint with the Wild. 2 goals, 3 assists, 5 points in 9 games. Were you surprised to see the team pull the plug on their 2015 first-round pick and send him back to the Swedish Elite League?
Yeah, if you would have asked me 2 weeks ago if Joel Eriksson Ek was here for the duration, I would have said absolutely. This is a team that is devoid of offensive firepower. This is a kid that brings it in spades, and he's young. He has the ability to learn on an NHL sheet of ice and learn from some pretty good veterans here in this Minnesota Wild locker room. You asked me 2 weeks ago, and I say absolutely he's going to stay. But as we've gone on, I think his development curtailed a little bit. Bruce Boudreau, you know, was getting fewer and fewer minutes. I think it was down to like 6-7 minutes on average and playing on a fourth line role. And for a 19-year-old kid, what good does that do him? So he gets the opportunity now. I would have thought it would have made more sense to send him back to the American Hockey League, but they end up sending him to Sweden instead. But it'll be another year of development. It can only mean good things for him. He'll get a chance to go to the World Juniors. He'll represent Sweden, and he'll do it on a real high level. And he'll continue to develop that frame. But early on in his time here, I thought it was a shoo-in he'd be here for the duration. But I think as guys started to get healthy, you got Halla back, you got Parisi back, and they saw what they had in like a Tyler Graevac who started to come of age once again, where he took a step back last year mostly due to injury and coming out of training camp didn't exactly seize the opportunity. Now that he's gotten called up again, I think they've shown that, or he's shown that he can provide some balance in the lineup, whether it be on the fourth line or now he's moving up into even a top six role. It kind of made Joel Eriksson Ek, for lack of a better word, expendable. So he could go back to Sweden and now have a chance to really grab some eyeballs when he comes into training camp next year.
Kevin, a few hours ago, Las Vegas announced its team name. They're going to be the Golden Knights, and as far as I'm concerned, that logo looked pretty good. As far as the Minnesota Wild are concerned, how much are fans paying attention to who they might protect for the upcoming expansion draft in June? I know Craig Button had Jonas Brodin as a Las Vegas selection, I guess thinking that he is going to be left unprotected by the Minnesota Wild. Is it safe to say that the Minnesota Wild aren't going to have a shortage of guys that they're going to expose for the expansion draft as opposed to the Jets, I guess, who have more young players that are exempt from being left unprotected in the expansion draft?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. This whole thing, I mean, we were on the other side of that. Now it's 16 years ago since we went through and watched the Minnesota Wild get built from guys like Wes Walls and Darby Hendrickson and Aaron Gavey and Stacey Roost, you know, Jamie McLennan. You go back down the list of guys that were on this team in that inaugural year, and it was a cool process to watch, but it's not so fun being on this side of it, that's for sure. You know, there's rumors about Jason Zucker might be one guy that would be destined for there because he's the only Las Vegas-born NHLer right now in professional hockey. Who knows what will happen? But I'm sure that there's some nervous bodies in and around what we call the state of hockey. And, you know, Chuck Fletcher has some decisions to make. Who is he going to leave exposed and who is he going to be, you know, worried about losing? It's going to be a interesting few months here as we lead up to that.
Kevin, because of his contract and his lack of production, would Jason Pominville be a guy that they might expose in the expansion draft?
Yeah, I think they probably would. They've had a few guys like that come through here. Matt Molson's another one that I can think of. Thomas Vanek is another guy that they just brought out. And, you know, and that's nothing against Jason Pominville. But he hit the goalpost twice on the same shift. It was three whacks, and I think it was Niederreiter who finally got it to fall. And if that doesn't sum up what Jason Pominville has gone through in the last, you know, 12, maybe even 18 months of his career here in Minnesota, that just sums it up in great detail. He makes a lot of money. He's still got a lot of term left on his contract. And I'm sure that that's a guy that they would welcome the opportunity to unload at some point, because right now he's just not producing at the level that they would like. They're hoping by reuniting him with Eric Halla and Nino Niederreiter, they can recapture some of that magic that they got in the waning moments of John Torchetti's tenure here in Minnesota. But, you know, I guess it's a possibility. I have no idea how the formatics of that would work, and I'd be surprised if Winnipeg would take them on their – Winnipeg, if Las Vegas would take them on their roster, considering what I'm sure they're going to be trying to do.
Kevin, we'll let you go on this last question. If you believe some of the insiders, the guys who are certainly say they have their ear to the ground with regard to trade rumors, the Wild have been rumored to be interested in acquiring a scorer. Of course, they and probably 29 other NHL teams would be interested in acquiring a scorer. Just how close or how serious do you think Chuck Fletcher has been in considering different trade offers? We've heard the name of a guy we're familiar with here in Winnipeg, Evander Kane, is potentially ending up in the Wild if they were to swing a deal. Chuck Fletcher and, of course, Tim Murray in Buffalo, good friends.
Yeah, is that a possibility? Anything's a possibility. I can't imagine that Chuck Fletcher isn't answering his phone any chance he gets at this point. And I'm sure Bruce Boudreau is right there in the room saying, answer the phone. Let's figure out what we can do to inject some offense here, because that's the one thing that is sorely missing here. I mean, that's the piece of the puzzle that they just don't have is a guy that they can rely on any given shift. Just like I was saying, like you guys have with your young stud in Line A and a couple of other guys on that roster. They need that. They need it desperately. And the one thing this Wild franchise has never done since the days of Jacques Lemaire, since the days of the expansion draft, they've never bottomed out. They've never had that guy in the top one, two, or three pick. And the one time they had the fourth overall pick, it ended up being Benoit Pouliot. We know how that turned out from a guy that, not exactly a guy you can build your franchise around. So they've had to do it piecemeal over the course of the years. They got the free agent acquisition in Parisi and Suter. I think they'd love to have another piece of the puzzle, but I don't have any inside scoop for you. I can just say that I think that Chuck Fletcher is definitely answering his phone on any type of opportunity that comes. He's going to explore everything.
Yeah,
that
Kevin
guy has never been one to shy away from a deal, that's for sure.
I was going
to
say, Kevin, Benoit Pouliot was a healthy scratch the other night for the Oilers.
Hey, believe me, and Benoit Pouliot's a great guy and all that stuff, but he went in the same draft as let's see, he went in 2005, so wouldn't that be the same draft as Benny Malkin?
Crosby.
Crosby, Ovechkin? I mean, I don't know. You go look at the three guys that went in front of him, and maybe even the couple of guys that went after him, and,
some guy named Andrzej Kopitar, it wasn't a great draft, but, Andrzej Kopitar went 11th overall and some guy named Carey Price went 5th overall.
Yeah, see, so it's one of those things. They didn't roll snake eyes on that one, unfortunately.
No. Kevin Faulness is the Minnesota Wild radio host on the Minnesota Wild Radio Network. Kevin, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks for staying up late with us. Have a great, enjoy tomorrow night's Jets Wild game in St. Paul.
Hey, and let me tell you this, the folks in St. Paul love it when the Jets are on the schedule. It's always a raucous atmosphere. It's always crazy in St. Paul at XL Energy Center, but especially when the Jets are on the schedule, it gets a little more crazy in St. Paul, and most of it's because of those guys in blue that come down there and scream their heads off throughout the course of the game. So keep bringing the thunder, and we love having you.
Between the Wild, Jets, and then the Vikings-Lions, it'll be a good Wednesday night, Thursday morning for sports fans in Minnesota.
Should be good.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it.
See you, boys.
Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. When we come back, the aftermath of the Predators-Lightning line brawl from last night.
Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Wired it high off the glass behind Green Egg, big hit behind the net. Josi got hit hard, and then it's followed up by the Predators. Josi down hard, Fisher took exception.
Blindsided hit. JT Brown closes down on Roman Josi right there. Shoulder, perhaps some of the elbow, high, and there's Josi going off, and he is none too pleased.
Geographically, they're relatively close to each other, Tampa Bay and Nashville, not terribly far away for those of you who know your map of the United States. on ice, not a lot of history or rivalry between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Nashville Predators. That may have all changed with last night's line brawl sparked by Ryan Ellis's hit on JT Brown, which of course was a response from JT Brown's hit on Roman Josi, which earlier than that, there was a hit by Magnus Arvidsson on... Victor Arvidsson.
Magnus Arvidsson, you're going back to the Ottawa Senator days.
That's right,
group.
We're going back. Yeah. We got my wrong Arvidsson. Arvidsson with a hit on Namestnikov. So things got real chippy in Tampa Bay between the Lightning and the Predators last night. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you're looking for a place to watch tomorrow night's Jets game, maybe you're looking for a place to watch some NFL football on Thursday or Friday's Jets-Predators game, Bernstein's Deli, 5 big screen TVs, full sound, great drink specials. Check them out, bernsteinsdeli.com, or visit them in the Cordon Village Mall. So a lot of rough action, some ruffian hits, some dirty hits potentially between the Predators and the Lightning last night. There was sort of... the hit between Arvidsson and Namestnikov was sort of separate from the other two hits.
Yeah.
In that it was an ugly hit, but Arvidsson, you could see, immediately did regret it.
Yep.
He went over to check on Namestnikov, and it was just sort of a bad situation for both guys at that point in time.
Yeah, like a footing issue almost. He was just pivoting to the glass while Arvidsson was at him going for the hit, and it just ends up being an unfortunate hit from behind. I mean, we saw something similar. Jordan Staal and Andrew Kopp, was that similar?
Yeah, I don't think that Arvidsson's hit on Namestnikov was deliberately malicious.
Yeah.
I think it's a matter of, Namestnikov was a little off balance, and Arvidsson probably shouldn't have cross-checked him where he did.
And you could even see, Drew, he held up a little bit.
But it wasn't really a cross-check. It was just, Namestnikov had a quick pivot.
Yeah.
And just all of a sudden.
Yeah, he was off balance.
Yeah, and off balance, and it looked a lot worse than it actually was, which, to your point, that's why they kind of said, hey, are you okay, instead of actually...
The real dirty stuff happened after there, where JT Brown, Roman Josi's coming around the Predator's net. JT Brown is coming from the other side. Roman Josi is unsuspecting, and JT Brown, who's a tough player, not very offensively skilled, but
he's not
tough,
very big either.
Not very big, but he's gritty.
Yeah, I like JT Brown, and
he laid out Roman Josi with a pretty strong body check that, depending on your opinion, probably depending on if you're a Predators fan or a Lightning fan, or depending on which replay you watch, it was either clean or it was a little bit too high, and he got him a little bit in the jaw.
Drew, I think it had less to do with who you were a fan of and more to do with what angle you saw it. Yeah. And then you just mentioned that. And I thought that was a clean hit, guys. Roman Josi has the puck. He has his head down. JT Brown's coming behind the net. It's not like he's charging or anything like that. And Roman Josi, again, he just doesn't see him coming, but it's head on. I don't think that JT Brown got too much of the head, or I certainly don't think the head was the primary point of contact. I think Ryan Ellis's hit later in that period on JT Brown was much dirtier. And I really like Ryan Ellis, and he had 3 assists in that game.
Let me just interrupt you there for a second. As what happened was, the Predators obviously did not like the hit that JT Brown leveled on Roman Josi.
Yep.
Josi himself didn't like it. You see him walking down the tunnel to the Predators dressing room, and he's angry. You can see him throwing things, throwing his gloves off. Later in the game, it's a 3-0 Predators game. The game is really out of hand. They're on the power play. Ryan Ellis takes an opportunity to blindside.
Well, it was a charge.
Yeah, charge at JT Brown, lay him out. Ellis almost got the worst of the hit, but Brown came up swinging, and then there was the brouhaha was on.
Yeah, I don't know. That's the only one where I kind of raise the red flag on it, and I say, just get them both out of the game.
Yeah,
I don't suspend on that one. But just, I wanted to go back to the other one behind the net, Josi. There's a serious inconsistency when it comes to the way the NHL calls this one. Remember a couple of years ago, Brent Seabrook on Backes in the playoffs, and that was a suspension. Just a couple of days ago, a similar hit. I don't know. I'm not sure if there was a call on it. Chris Russell, Tyler Mott on the Hawks.
That was last night. Yeah, Chris Russell absolutely laid out Tyler Mott.
And kind of a similar hit and clean, right?
Yeah.
But yet some people like to argue that it's a high hit based on the way the player follows through. So I think it's really whatever angle you see, but I think the NHL still has a serious problem when it comes to consistency. The other one, JT Brown, Ryan Ellis. I'd kick them both out of the game, get rid of the fisticuffs, and go from there. I mean, I didn't really see anything wrong with it. That was just, you know, tempers are flaring a little too high at that point.
Ezzy, I want you to hold your thoughts on this. We're going to come back to the issue of body checking a little bit later on in the show, because Larry Brooks of the New York Post a couple weeks ago wrote an article sort of decrying the end of body checking in the NHL.
At least open ice. Yeah.
So Larry Brooks talked about it. We're going to talk about it in coming up in a couple segments. Right now, let's head to break. Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News joins us next. The Sharks, big money, big deal today with Brent Burns. We talked to Curtis about the contract and about the Sharks coming up next on NHL This Week, live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week. Coming at you live on TSN 1290, Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Joel Marcoux with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Curtis Pashelka. Curtis covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. In addition to being the defending Western Conference champions, the San Jose Sharks got a big piece of their team under contract, preventing him from heading into unrestricted free agency at season's end. Curtis, 8 years, $64 million for Brent Burns. Any idea how many razor blades you can buy for $64 million?
That's a good question. I don't know if Brent Burns is willing to test that theory. He seems to really like that thing. But, great day for Brent Burns, and obviously a good day for the Sharks as well. It was, he was really happy today, and so was Doug Wilson.
So obviously they get the deal done with Burns. He's in his 30s right now. This contract, he'll expire just prior to the time he's 40 years old. You know, why were the Sharks and Doug Wilson willing to go the full max contract for Brent Burns, particularly given that he's going to be definitely on the wrong side of 30, almost 40, when the contract comes to an end?
Right. I mean, Doug Wilson, he usually doesn't give contracts more than 5 years. I mean, Joe Pavelski got a 5-year deal. Logan Couture got a 5-year deal. You know, Brent Burns' last deal was 5 years. So was Mark-Edward Vlasic. So this is unusual for Doug to give out a contract this length. But I think he likes his, he feels that, Burns could be a player that can keep his style of play. Maybe has to pick his spots a little bit more as he gets older, but feels he can still do what he does. For at least 6 or 7 years, and maybe just to get the deal done, you've got to add maybe those last year or two. So, I think it's at least it gives the Sharks some peace of mind that they have one of their cornerstones locked up for the next 8 years, and also from Burns' standpoint, that long-term security, being with the same team. He loves being in San Jose. He loves being a member of the Sharks. So he was all too happy to get a deal done today.
Curtis, earlier today, Pierre LeBrun reported that Burns is going to earn $54 million in the first 6 years of the deal, and then he's going to make $5 million a year in the final 2 seasons of the deal, and that's going to include a bonus in those first 6 years. Is that due in part to the fact that there might be another lockout around that time?
Right, yeah, there's a little bit of lockout protection, up in 2020. I'm not sure. I don't know the exact breakdown. I had it in front of me. I don't have it right now, but it definitely gives there's something worked in the contract there that gives some Burns some protection should there be a lockout as far as getting more bonus money and a little bit less salary that particular year. So that was worked in, obviously, that's something that a lot of GMs are going to have to kind of figure out how they want to
go about things when they're trying to lock up some of their marquee players. So Doug Wilson's no different. I think he realized that was something he had to give up and just to kind of get a deal done with Burns.
Doug Wilson is clearly in win-now mode, especially with Thornton and Marlow pending UFAs. What's this Sharks puzzle missing right now?
Well, I think having Tomas Hertl go down for a few weeks certainly doesn't help matters for the Sharks. They're trying to get a little bit more offense from their blue line. You know, Burns aside, you know, they'd like to see, you know, Mark-Edward Vlasic chip in a little bit more, Justin Braun, David Schlemko, a guy they signed in the offseason. Some of these guys just to kind of chip in a little bit more on the offense. But more than that is some of the guys they have up front, they're just having seasons that are just way below par, below what they've been used to in the past. Guys like Joel Ward, still slow out of the gate. Mikael Bodker, the guy they signed with a lot of high expectations that he can come in and if he was surrounded by some more talent, he could have a better year, but it just hasn't worked out for him so far this year for Bodker. Just a couple of goals in 19 games. So, the biggest thing is just goal scoring. I think they feel that they've tightened things up defensively over the last couple of weeks. They're getting for the most part pretty consistent goaltending. You know, Martin Jones has had some off games here and there, but for the most part, he's given his team a chance to win most games. So. Biggest thing is missing is just that extra goal a game. You know, they've lost a lot of one goal games over the last month or so, and if they feel that they can get some timely goals, they can kind of maybe get on a little bit of a win streak and maybe solidify a spot in the top three in the division.
Curtis Pashelka is our guest on NHL This Week. Curtis covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, sticking with the Burns signing, you know, most people, they think about the San Jose Sharks, and they probably think that they're a bit of an older team because, you know, the first two names that often come to mind for casual fans, let's say, are Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau, both of those guys over 37 years old. In reality, though, the team is fairly young, particularly with their core pieces. I mean, Logan Couture is still only 27. Joe Pavelski into his early 30s now. But you got guys like Jonas Donskoy. He's not even 25 yet. And Chris Tierney. And then some of their former first-round picks that are still trying to crack the roster. Timo Meier, of course, drafted 9th overall a couple of years ago. And Nikolai Goldobin, drafted in 2014. Is part of the reason they're okay with giving Brent Burns the full 8 years is because the next generation of San Jose Sharks are really still going to be under 30 when that contract comes to fruition?
Yeah, I think that's safe. That's a safe bet. I mean, you've got a lot of those guys that you just mentioned kind of haven't broken through yet. You figure if they have another year or two, they'll start coming up and being able to make an impact, and at least that's what the Sharks hope for anyway. There's certainly no guarantee that a guy like Nikolai Goldobin could come in and be a consistent, say, our second or third line player. I think the perception is, though, that, yeah, you've got a guy like Timo Meier in the pipeline, and he's starting to play pretty well in the American League right now. It's his first year as a professional. But there isn't that, besides Timo, there isn't that real stud, blue chip guy waiting in the wings to sort of be that next Joe Thornton, be that next Patrick Marleau. So I think that's where the perception comes from, because you look at other teams around the league, and the Jets are a perfect example. They've got a star, you know, right now. Patrick Laine, obviously a perfect example. The Sharks still have to kind of figure out who that next stud's going to be. Timo Meier's, you know, the guy people who look towards as sort of being the brightest prospect in the system. So, yeah, I think, you know, giving Brent Burns that term, having him be sort of that face of the franchise going forward for the next 7 or 8 years, that's big. And obviously, it gives, you know, because of, you know, Burns's unique talents, you're not going to find guys like that out in free agency or, you know, through the draft very often. So. So I think, you know, it works from one standpoint, that the Sharks are, you know, happy to give him the term, and at least, you know, knowing that he's going to be with the team for a long time, and also knowing that, you know, it's difficult to find guys like that, whether it's in free agency or through the draft.
You know, Curtis, Drew just mentioned earlier Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau, the elder statesman of this team, and it seemed like just yesterday that both of those players signed their identical three-year deals, but this is the last year of both of their contracts. They're pending UFAs. They both make around $6.7 million. Joe Thornton makes a little bit more there. What are the San Jose Sharks, what is Doug Wilson specifically going to do with Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau? Are they going to be signed to 1 or 2 year deals with the expansion draft coming up? I wouldn't expect those guys to be exposed to the expansion draft. So what's going to happen here? Are they going to wait till the end of the season to deal with this, or is there a chance that they get signed earlier than we think?
My guess is that Joe's contract is going to get done before we get to June. I just don't see that lingering too much longer. I think, maybe right around the All-Star break, right around that time, I think you'll see a deal get done. As far as the term, I think the Sharks might be comfortable giving Joe another 3-year deal, at a slightly reduced salary. But, a guy like Patrick Marleau, maybe a little bit more in the up in the air. He's still a good player. He's still a valuable player to the Sharks right now. He's up on the top line with Thornton Pavelski for tomorrow night's game against the Blackhawks. So, but do they want to give him three-year deal considering how much his production has kind of tailed off here in the last 2 or 3 seasons? That's something that Doug's going to have to answer. And, Joe Thornton coming off a season like he had last year, I think there's a little bit less hesitancy to maybe give him, a 2 or 3 year deal. Patrick Marleau, if he wants a 2 or 3 year deal, he's either going to have to, take a pretty big salary cut to do it or look outside the Sharks to get a deal like that. He definitely wants to play another year at least beyond this season. So, a little bit more up in the air. I think it's more likely that a deal gets done with Joe before a deal gets done with Patrick Marleau.
You mentioned him earlier when touching on maybe needing more scoring. What the heck's going on with Mikhail Bodker?
Well, he's you can tell he's putting a lot of pressure on himself. He's doing some okay things. It's not like he's being irresponsible at the defensive end, and he's creating maybe a good scoring chance for him, at least one per game kind of thing. But excuse me, but I just don't know. It's just finding the right fit for him. He started on the line with Logan Couture and Jonas Donskoy to start the season. Then he was moved up to the top line with Belsky and Thornton. Now he's on the third line with Chris Tierney at center and Matt Nieto at the other wing. And it's just a matter of kind of finding where can he be the most effective, where can he find space on the ice, create plays and do what he's done in the past to create offense and get more scoring chances. It's just been a real struggle so far right now, sort of finding that right fit for him and what he can bring is, to be able to let his talents kind of shine through. So, Pete DeBoer feels that, Mikhail's, his game is improving. That for right now, don't measure him by his numbers, but how much he's, how many chances he's creating, what kind of, what is, I guess 200 foot game, if you want to put it like that, what that looks like right now. So, but still, he signed a guy for 4 years, $4 million a year. You want to see a little bit more than one goal a month. So we'll see how it goes going forward. But right now, it's just a real struggle for Miguel.
Curtis, we'll let you go on this last question. Pete DeBoer, obviously had that great first year as the Sharks head coach last season, taking them all the way to the Stanley Cup final. Definitely an unexpected berth in the Stanley Cup final. How have you seen him change as a head coach entering this year, his second year behind the San Jose Sharks bench and coming off of the cup run, and maybe how expectations might be different and how Pete DeBoer has handled the change in those expectations?
Well, last year it was a crash course for just about everybody for how they wanted to play under Pete, coming off of playing under Tom McClellan for 7 years and going to a guy like Pete who has a different personality and kind of way a diff- different way of doing things. So a little bit of a culture shock last year at the start of the season. This year it's you know, he's able to kind of implement things a little bit quicker. Guys are able to pick things up a little bit more. You know, the Sharks had seven guys at the World Cup of Hockey. So it was still a little bit tough for these guys to get going right off the hop. But the differences in him, I don't see any major differences in him. I think he learned a lot last year about dealing with a group like the Sharks that has a little bit older players, you know, a few more older players than maybe some other teams he's had. You know, guys, you know, just learning about their personalities, what makes them, you know, play at the top of their game. I think, you know, last year he gave a lot of time off, try to keep these guys off the ice as much as possible during the game, during, you know, between games. They didn't practice a whole lot, so they kind of waited, you know, rest as being a little bit more valuable down the stretch than just being on the ice for practice every day. So he learned that. I think this year it's you can see he's a little bit more comfortable in the group, a little bit comfortable in his surroundings. You know, he's definitely very blunt when things aren't going well, but I think he's still got the year of the team, a lot of respect around the Sharks room. And you know, I think when there's a little bit of adversity, he knows how to handle it maybe a little bit better this year than maybe in years past.
Curtis Pashelka covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right, you guys, no problem.
Okay, we'll do it again soon, Curtis. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
And there you go.
McDonough banks it off Fleury. That backhander's in. Michael Grabner. That's blocked away by Grabner, who breaks to the net. Grabner scores. Oh, Michael Grabner. Oh, do you love that speed?
Quickly the other way goes Grabner. Down the right side. Grabner. Wrist shot. Score. Michael Grabner goes 12 side and beats Brian Elliott.
How about the season that Grabner is off to?
How about the season that Michael Grabner is off to? 12 goals on the year so far.
Yeah, the Cy Young season.
Yeah, 12 goals, exactly right. That's 12 goals, 4 assists, 12 wins, 4 losses for Michael Grabner, if you want to look at it in baseball terms. Not bad for a guy who signed a 2-year, $3.3 million deal with the Rangers in the offseason. They're getting their money's worth and then some. If he doesn't score another goal this year, you'll take 12 goals for the $1.65 million in change. Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, maybe you have an old Michael Grabner Manitoba Moose jersey that you want to get personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com or check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue, the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. You can't miss them. Tell them Illegal Curve sent you. Whatever you need for jerseys, they will help you out. They do great work at Keener Jerseys.
Now, Drew, we're doing the Keener Jerseys podcast, and I was there on Sunday.
Yeah.
And every time I go in there, I check out all the jerseys that they're working on. The one that caught my eye the most was they had this sweet vintage Brendan Shanahan on the Whalers jersey.
Ooh, nice.
And I asked them if I could just take it, but they said I couldn't. But
no, somebody else owns that, you know, that's called stealing at that point
in
time.
Yeah. Custom made for somebody?
Custom made, and you know, they have hundreds of jerseys in there. Anytime
so
you get a chance.
So that would have been after he got traded, after the Pronger trade,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Yeah, because that was one of the all-time blockbusters that nobody really remembers that as an all-time blockbuster, Brendan Shanahan for Chris Pronger.
And what's coming out soon, I think in as early as February, is the Las Vegas jersey will be unveiled and they're going to start selling it. The logo, of course, was unveiled a couple of hours ago in Las Vegas, but the jersey won't be available for about 3 months. But certainly people are going to be snatching those up when they come out.
I'm sure that they certainly will. And, of course, Keener Jerseys, they'll be able to customize it for you if you buy a Vegas Golden Knights jersey. Yeah. And we'll talk about the logo unveil a little bit later on in the show. But Michael Grabner, you know, it's, you're at the quarter mark of the season now, so you can sort of begin to evaluate some of the free agent signings that have been made throughout the NHL, and you can evaluate them, you know, doing it after, you know, 5 games or after 10 games or even after 15 games, probably a little unfair. But after 20 games, it's, you know, you can say that some things are working out better than others. Michael Grabner, 2 years, $3.3 million, working out fantastically for the New York Rangers.
It's unbelievable, guys. And if you said that 20 or so games into the season, you know, Sidney Crosby and Patrick Laine were going to be tied for the league lead in goals at 12, you'd say, okay, you know, Patrick Laine, he can put the puck in the net. Sidney Crosby, even though he's known more for his assists, he's one of the best players, if not the best player. I think he's the best player in the game right now. Okay, but Michael Grabner, I mean, Michael Grabner's coming, you know, out of a, you know, a pretty bad season with the Toronto Maple Leafs, where he scored 9 goals all year. You know, people forget, though, Michael Grabner scored 35 goals with the New York Islanders, pardon me, 34 goals with the New York Islanders. You know, that was 5 or 6 years ago now. But this is a guy, you know, you mentioned his time with the Manitoba Moose, 30-goal season with the Manitoba Moose when he was part of the Vancouver Canucks organization. So it's not like this guy is coming out of obscurity.
Was he a 14th overall pick or something like that?
He was a 14th overall pick, yeah. That's a good memory. I just happen to have HockeyDB open right now, Joel, so I can confirm that. But, I mean, what a story. And, you know, you mentioned he's making less than $2 million a year right now for the New York Rangers. And, you know, they're out without Mika Zibanejad right now, who's going to be out of the lineup for 2 months. But what a story. You know, good to see Michael Grabner, you know, coming off of a couple of bad years with the Islanders and the Leafs. And, you know, now he's tied for the league lead in goals.
It's also a byproduct of team success. I mean, when the Jets were at MSG a couple of Sundays ago, at that time, it was a 50-50 split between top six scoring and bottom six scoring. They're getting fed offense from all over the place, and it kind of reminded me of what the Montreal Canadiens did last year until Carey Price, of course, went down, was November 25th, I think, because going into that, they had only lost, I think, 2 or 3 games in regulation time. Dale Weiss was already at about 9 goals. Thomas Fleischmann had a bunch of goals. Paul Byron, who they had claimed off of waivers, had already at that point, I think, had 3 shorties. I guess what I'm getting at is this early season success for Grabner, you know, as the team goes, sometimes the offense goes, let's just see if we can continue to see this kind of progression. He's got the skill to make it happen. Dale Weiss, on the other hand, who parlayed that into a deal with the Flyers, not necessarily gaining as much success. I mean, last year, of his 14 goals, 9 of them were before December.
Well, and you mentioned Dale Weiss, and that is one of the signings that would go down on the negative side of things so far, unfortunately, of course, for the Winnipeg player, the guy, Winnipeg-born player now with the Philadelphia Flyers. He signed a 4-year deal with the Flyers, still looking for his first goal on the year, only got 2 assists. I'm surprised. I thought Dale Weiss in a Philadelphia Flyers uniform would have worked much better than it has so far this season.
Yeah, but the season is still early, and you know he's got 1 goal on the season. And he's
0 goals.
But I think,
I think
go
he does have
then.
A goal.
Okay, maybe I'm looking at some old stats. That's possible.
Yeah, I think he got his first goal recently, Drew. But you know, needless to say, Joel, Dale Weiss is not a guy who you were counting on to score 25 goals and 50 points, right?
Right.
You were hoping that, you know, he was going to provide some veteran toughness, and, you know, if he can chip in 10 or 15 goals playing on the third or fourth line, that's great, right? And the Philadelphia Flyers as a whole have been inconsistent. The goaltending, you know, starting to get a little bit better. Steve Mason and Michael Neuwirth were both pretty bad early on. Mason started to play a little bit better, and, you know, you had Shane Goss to spare, a healthy scratch against the Winnipeg Jets earlier last week. So, I mean, this is a team that as a whole has been inconsistent. So I agree with you, Drew. Sure, Dale Weiss has had a rough start to the season, but, you know, let's let the season play out here. And he's more so a guy that, you know, they want him to be more of a grinder, right? And so, you know, but the goals will come for him.
It's the season is still young, but let's say Grabner finishes with only 22 goals.
Is it disappointing?
Is it a disappointing season considering he's already at a dozen?
What you've paid for him, you can't complain about it. But considering that you're at a dozen after 20 games, and if you only got 10 goals for the next 60 games, you'd be a little bit eh. But he's, you know, at some point in time, your expectations still have to revert back to what the player is and what he has been throughout his entire career.
Yeah.
That being said, Michael Grabner's best attribute has always been his speed.
Yes.
And it's a speed game right now. It's a fast man's game right now. So
and the Rangers in general are fast.
Rangers are fast. He's playing on a good situation where he's playing, you know, with, you know, in sort of easier minutes against worse competition.
Yeah,
so I would be surprised to see his goals completely dry up over the next 60 games. That being said, I don't think he's going to be a 50-goal scorer or anything this year. Yeah.
You know, this is a name from the past, but you know who I think of when you say, you know, he had a crazy start to the season?
Brian Savage?
Brian Savage is one guy, but Alexander Selivanov with the Edmonton Oilers in the late 90s there, I think he had something like 20 goals in the first 35 games, and he ended up finishing with 27 or 28 goals or something. So it's quite possible that Michael Grabner doesn't keep up the pace. I mean, he's not going to score 50 goals this year.
That's Thomas Vanek in a nutshell. Was it a couple years ago when Vanek was still on Buffalo where I think he led the NHL in scoring at maybe the 25 or the 30-game mark, and he was over a point a game, and I think he had 3 points the rest of the year. It's a typical Thomas Vanek where, flashes for a 20 or a 30-game period of time and then nothing for the next. Next 50 games. One last player that's really been impressive so far, because you mentioned the Montreal Canadiens, that is Alex Radulov. This is a guy who certainly left the NHL under a cloud after his tenure in Nashville came to an end. This year, signs with the Habs, 1 year, $5.75 million. Well, they've been getting their money's worth out of Radulov. 4 goals, 13 assists, 17 points in 18 games, and he certainly has been one of the straws that have stirred the drink to a successful Montreal Canadiens season thus far.
Yeah, I was floored when they announced that signing. I mean, I was here with Rick Ralph back on July 1st, and we were talking about the signings, and here you have Montreal, who just a week earlier, they pulled that trigger on that PK Subban-Shea Weber deal, and Shea Weber was, of course, the captain of that team back in 2012. The Predators went in the playoffs. That's when Radulov and Sergei Kostitsyn, in the middle of game two or three, and they went out partying and boozing and all that kind of stuff, and, yada, yada, yada. The rest is history, and he never resurfaced in the NHL until then. So I'm thinking, what is this? But, he showed up at camp and said, those days are behind me, and he certainly has shown that. And he's been worth every penny so far. And, if he keeps us going, he's going to get a nice little extension, whether it's in Montreal or a different team.
I agree with you, Joel. Alexander Radulov has been very good for the Montreal Canadiens. Only 4 goals, but he's been setting up a lot of goals scored by Alex Galchenyuk, who's having an underrated season. Another guy I think that we should mention here is Paul Byron, a sixth-round draft pick, Drew, who spent the most part of his early career in the American Hockey League. He's got 7 goals in 20 games. And he's been playing on the top line with Galchenyuk and Radulov. So, good for Paul Byron, a guy who was a late bloomer, a late draft pick, and he's having a great season for Montreal.
Plenty more players that we could talk about. Time constraints prevent us, but we'll cycle back to this either on Saturday's show or maybe next week on NHL This Week as well. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to continue piggybacking on that body-checking conversation we had last hour. Larry Brooks wrote a column about it a couple weeks ago. We'll talk about if Brooksy is right in his assessment. We'll talk about more about body-checking. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Rebound at the line. What a body check by Morrissey. He absolutely leveled one of the Chicago Blackhawks. Hinostroza was the one that took that body check from Morrissey, and Vinny Hinostroza is in another world right now, just inside his own blue line.
By Stone, he is hammered by Bufflin, and that is going to draw a crowd. Wow, did Bufflin ever level Stone?
Two big hits Winnipeg Jets fans will remember well. Josh Morrissey, just about 10 days ago or so, laying out Vinny Hinostroza.
Mini Buff.
And then Dustin Bufflin last year with that hit heard around the NHL world on poor Mark Stone. I'm not sure if Stone is that was the biggest hit I've ever seen live in person. Just absolutely destroyed Mark Stone on
that was
hit.
The best hit we've ever seen at the MTS Center.
I would agree with that statement. And Bufflin's laid a number of good hits, but that hit, open ice, clean, everything about it was one of the biggest hits you're going to see in the world of the NHL.
And if I remember correctly, it was Zach Smith that came in there and then tried to fight Dustin Byfuglien.
This was Godzilla. It wasn't going
to
matter.
Buff just kind of like, you know, grabbed him, and Zach Smith's like, oh, oops, I'm trying to fight Buff.
Yeah. Oops, I'm going to go away now. Welcome back to NHL This Week. The segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors have been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. This week at Rumors and next week, Ron Jossel in town. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Not many tickets available, but some. And a reminder, coming up in January, Aries Spears from Mad TV. And then coming up in February, Jay Farrow, formerly of Saturday Night Live, is going to be performing at Rumors. And speaking of Jay Farrow, Ezzy, do you know what Jay Farrow was up to this past weekend?
Yes, he was hosting the American Music Awards.
Exactly right.
And you had a tweet.
I had a tweet.
That night, Sunday night.
I don't believe it was. Maybe it was Sunday night.
Yeah, it was Sunday night.
Okay, Sunday night.
Yeah, because it was on the 20th, and
yeah,
tonight is the 22nd.
That's 2 days ago,
Sunday I wasn't night. Watching. Apparently, Selena Gomez had a very touching speech.
About what?
I think it was just her struggles.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, she was dealing with some personal problems. But
as opposed to Miley Cyrus's speech, where she was actually just touching herself during the speech.
I don't watch the American Music Awards because I don't really follow most of the artists. But you had a tweet, Drew, and we got to get to the bottom of this because apparently you had a bit of an encounter with Dick Clark 10 years ago.
Yeah, it would have been actually closer to 15 years ago now.
Okay.
I was in California for the 2003 Super Bowl, which was held in San Diego. But I have family all up and down California. So we were in Los Angeles. Must have been the week after. I'm not 100% sure about the exact details. But we were in Los Angeles visiting some relatives. And I have a cousin who is heavily involved in show business in California. And he's responsible for often getting the crowds and the audiences. And he'd be like, you know, for different TV shows. He works for Dr. Phil and for Oprah's production company, he's responsible for getting the audience for the Dr. Phil show and some of the spin-offs from that. I think the show is called The Doctors or something. Anyways, he's heavily involved in the audience game in California, in Hollywood. And when they have the big award shows, he's always working there doing, hoarding the cats on the red carpet. And we've seen him in the background of the Oscars and, you know, he's a seat filler sometimes. Anyways, the American Music Awards are going on, and he said to me, hey, I'm going to go to the American Music Awards. Do you want to come with me? This is just for the rehearsal, unfortunately. They couldn't go to the actual award show, but do you want to come with me to the rehearsal for the American Music Awards? And I didn't know better. I think I was 21 at the time, so I said, sure, that sounds like fun. So he takes me backstage to the American Music Awards, and it's sort of cool. There's some famous people hanging around. And as you guys well know, I'm a fan of food, so I'm standing there a bit backstage, and, you know, I'm standing in front of the coffee machine, and I feel a tap on my shoulder, and I turn around. It's Dick Clark, and Dick Clark says to me, excuse me, young man, do you mind getting out of the way? You're blocking the box of Krispy Kreme donuts.
So hold on, were you just getting coffee or were you also trying to get into the Krispy Kreme donuts?
I don't recall. Odds are I'd already been in the Krispy Kreme donuts.
Were you already knuckle deep?
I was probably on to at least my second donut at that point in time. But, you know, I was going to go for a third. But then Dick Clark came in like Dikembe Mutombo.
Yeah.
He swatted it away and then said, no more for you.
So when he said that, Drew, did you just kind of get out of the way? Or did you kind of say like, no, like, you know, I'm here. I also want a Krispy Kreme donut.
Well, I mean, I'm Drew Mindell and he's Dick Clark. So I think he's going to win that battle because it's, you know, the American Music Awards. I don't know if they still are, but at the end of the show, they say it's a Dick Clark production. So I think he owns the American Music Awards, or at least used to, or had some heavy involvement in it. So I promise you that if I was mouthing off to Dick Clark about the Krispy Kreme donuts, I was going to lose that battle a lot quicker than Dick Clark was going to lose that battle.
What was the scenery like back there?
Was a little more disappointing than I thought. There weren't as many starlets and superstars around at that point in time. I believe I saw Lone Star perform their act at that point or their song, and I'm not a big country music fan, but it was pretty cool to see them, you know, from, you know, 2 feet away do the exact same thing they would do during the show the next night or two nights later, whatever it was.
Were they plugged in?
Yeah, they were plugged in. They were performing the whole nine yards. Like they weren't faking it like they probably did on TV a little bit later on.
Yeah.
But it was pretty interesting. You know,
nice.
Not an opportunity that you get every day. And Krispy Kreme donuts, really. Yeah. Can't go wrong.
Drew, is it true that later in the dress rehearsal, Garth Brooks told you to get out of the way because you were blocking his way to the sandwiches?
That's not true, but I can see why that story would be very funny. Anyway, so that is my American Music Awards Krispy Kreme Dick Clark story.
Do you like Krispy Kreme donuts?
Only if they are super fresh. Sometimes...
are they no longer fresh?
If you're driving past the Krispy Kreme donuts in the States, there's a light. They have a flashing light that says now fresh or like now hot.
There's a fresh light.
But are we talking,
there is, like meaning a batch has just come out. And when you go in there at that point in time, they're delicious.
But if you say only fresh, I'm talking like if it's 2 hours ago, is that no longer fresh?
That's no longer good enough. They have to be piping hot still. Yeah. Otherwise, they get a little bit... they're not as good at, they lose their viability very quickly.
As far as I'm concerned,
yeah.
And by the way, this conversation is very apropos because we have two boxes of Timbits in the studio.
I actually combined them into one box now.
Okay.
I think we might leave these for the big show guys. They're going to be in here in about 5 hours. So they can still have some Timbits at that point.
Yeah, Westy, Jim, and Brandon can enjoy our day-old Timbits.
Yeah, well, they're not even day-old at that point in time. They're not even 12 hours old at that point in time.
Just on the topic, though, of Krispy Kreme, because, that's an American chain.
Yes.
I actually prefer Dunkin' Donuts.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You had Dunkin' Donuts, I'm presuming, when you went to Boston after the draft in Philadelphia?
Yep, and I of course, had a Boston cream.
Ah, well, yeah, as you should at Dunkin' Donuts. I'll tell you what. Let's go to break. We'll take our final break. Then we'll come back and do the body checking segment because we got a little bit off the rails there with the Krispy Kreme Dick Clark American Music Award segment. So one more segment to come. It's a Wednesday evening, or it's a Tuesday evening. Things are getting a little out of control here on NHL.
Well, it's almost Wednesday
week.
Morning.
It's almost Wednesday morning, but it's still Tuesday evening here on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
One final segment this Tuesday night here on TSN 1290. A quick programming note regarding Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A little bit of a later start time than normal. We have Grey Cup Saturday here on the station, so we're going to get underway at 1 o'clock for Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll look back on Friday's Jets-Predators game. We'll preview the rematch coming up on Sunday, so put it in your calendar, jot it down in your day timer, put it in your Palm Pilot, 1 o'clock.
Palm Pilot?
What
is this, 1998?
Maybe somebody's still got a Palm Pilot. You never know.
If you can find me a person that still has a Palm Pilot, Drew, then
jotting it down.
Good for you.
1 o'clock. 1 o'clock on Saturday.
Right next to their Zach Morris cell phone.
Yeah, you never know. Hey. You never know. You got to be. Yeah. You have to be open-minded here, Ezzy. You got to open your arms up to the entire world. Maybe somebody doesn't have an iPhone. Maybe they're using a Palm Pilot still.
Come on, Drew. Let me get out my Motorola StarTAC.
Yeah, well, there you go. 1 o'clock in any event Saturday for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And then next Wednesday, we're back to Wednesday with NHL This Week.
Yep.
Again, a later start, though. 10 p.m. next Wednesday. So we're just sort of getting this under our belt. So by next Wednesday, we'll be completely delirious for the entire 2 hours.
Yeah, you just mentioned the Grey Cup. I'll be filling in for Hustler and Lawless on Sunday morning,
yes,
live from Boston Pizza with none other than Mr. Movember, Jim Toth.
Well, so you've got the beard and the mustache together, yep, and so I hope whoever's producing has a goatee,
yep,
just to make sure that you have all the facial hair
are
covered.
Are they going to serve breakfast at BP?
Ezio'll have a
pizza.
Can
you get an omelet pizza or something like that?
It
doesn't really matter. He'll just have a pizza.
You know, when we do pre and post there, Joel, and you do pre and post as well for the station, I always get the pierogi pizza. It's my go-to. So if I can get a breakfast pierogi pizza, then
you crush it there.
Let's do
you
it
take
up.
It to go.
I crush it there.
When you don't hear him speak for about 45 minutes yeah, during the pregame show, yeah, that's why he's
thoughts
crushing
the
pierogi pizza at that point in time. Okay, let's go back to the conversation, that Larry Brooks article. It was back a few weeks ago, in November 12th, about body checking in the NHL. And Larry's of the opinion that body checking as an art form, as to quote him, to use the term loosely, is gone from the game.
Yep.
Here's the money quote. But if there is something missing on the ice, it is the art form, to use the term loosely, of physical intimidation. For better or worse, it is gone forever. Better for the protection of the athletes. Worse for the loss of the raw primal emotion that historically accompanied the game. Conn Smythe's, if you can't beat him in the alley, you can't beat him on the ice, dictum no longer is regarded as sage truth, but rather perceived as prehistoric ignorance. Keep your head up is regarded as a scold rather than as indispensable counsel. Hitting is disappearing from the game. Every big blow draws reclamation and retaliation. Those among the Board of Governors who fear that hitting will become extinct if the NHL outlaws all blindside hits have good reason to worry. It is the ice capades out there. Is he right? Is hitting gone from the game? Is it the ice capades out there?
Well, it's not gone from the game, clearly, based on what we discussed a few segments ago with what we saw in the Lightning and Predators game yesterday and, you know, the Stone Byfuglien hit. But it certainly is evaporating at a slow rate. I mean, what you just said. I remember my first year, junior, and I got rocked, and I got back on the bench, and somebody just said, keep your head up, kid.
Yep.
Nowadays, the mitts are dropped, and the knuckles start to fly. Why? I mean, a nice, clean hit, and he no longer gets the tap on the shoulder and say, hey, wow, you got me good. And you no longer see any of that. So, to his point, yes, it is evaporating, but it's not ice capades just yet.
I agree with you, Joel, and you know, for me, I mean, that's my favorite part of hockey. I am a graduate of the University of Scott Stevens body checking major. I mean,
hang on. You're a graduate of the University of Scott Stevens?
You know that Scott Stevens is my favorite player of all time. You know that.
I know that completely. But you're okay. Not going to – I'll let you continue your point, just so long as you know that you're not going to hear the end of your comment that you're a graduate of the University of Scott
Stevens. But honestly, Drew, though, I mean, you could say that, you know, I'm old school and I'm stuck in the past, and that was 16 years ago that Scott Stevens won the Conn Smythe in 2000 when the Devils won the Cup. But his physicality was a huge reason why the Devils won the Stanley Cup. Obviously, you know, timely goal scoring and excellent goaltending from Marty Brodeur were huge parts as well. But, I mean, body checking exists, but I think the lines have been blurred between what's a clean body check and what's a penalty. And, mm-hmm. I mean, you look at some of the biggest hitters in the NHL, and Dustin Byfuglien and Adam Lowry are top 20 in the NHL in hits right now. Guys like Matt Martin and Cal Clutterbuck on that fourth line of the New York Islanders. I mean, those guys play a key role.
Well, Martin on the Leafs now, but last right. year that was the best fourth line in hockey.
But go back 3 or 4 years when the LA Kings won their first of two cups. Dustin Brown was out there hitting everything. He's always among the league leaders in hits. I mean, it's a huge part of the game. It might not be as big of a part in the game, but the point is that if a clean body check is made, there doesn't necessarily need to be a penalty or retaliation. I mean, think of how many times, guys, a big Dustin Byfuglien hit or a big Adam Lowry hit has potentially changed the momentum, even if it's just a little bit
yeah.
in a game, right? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that game in Chicago, Dustin Byfuglien had a big hit on Richard Ponick, and then Josh Morrissey had the big hit on Vinny Hinostroza. That sends a message to the rest of the team. Keep your head up, guys. This isn't – you're in our building, and we're going to make it hard for you to have any space out there. So I think body checking will continue to have a big impact on the outcomes of games. But right now, I think we're starting to see guys maybe hesitate a little bit or not know what's a penalty and what isn't a penalty. But, I mean, come on, Drew. This is hockey at the end of the day.
But you touched on the momentum swing. I mean, you mentioned Scott Stevens in that 2000 series.
Yep.
Remember the conference final when they're trailing the Flyers 3-1? What was yep. the turning point?
Yep.
When Stevens caught Big E coming through the middle with his head down, right? So that physical intimidation that Brooksy talks about, that's what's leaving. It's not the forwards. You know, Clutterbuck, those guys, they're always going to be hitting on the forecheck. But it's that intimidating D-man that catches you with your head down. Cronwall,
sure.
Those kinds of guys.
Yep.
That is certainly getting out of the game, not because we wanted to leave, but because that's what's going on. They catch you with your head down. All of a sudden, there's a line brawl.
Well, let me ask you guys this. I mean, and is it leaving the game for good?
No.
Or is it cyclical in that right now we're in a stage of the NHL's life cycle where skill is being emphasized more than physicality? Because it wasn't that many years ago that everybody was wanting to copycat the Los Angeles Kings. And the Kings were big and they were tough and the Ducks, and they would grind you out down low. I mean, how many years ago where the Anaheim Ducks strategy against the Winnipeg Jets in the playoffs was to drive Toby Enstrom into the
right.
end boards on each and every dump in.
Yeah, guys like Corey Perry, Ryan yeah. Kessler, Ryan Getzlaf.
So is body yep. can you really say body checking is leaving the game?
No, it's not that. It's I think it's the open ice hits. It's not body checking. You're always going to see dump and chase. You're always going to see a forecheck. You're always going to see me finishing my check on Ezzie, who is the D-man. It's the open ice hitting. When you're coming across the blue line with your head down, and all of a sudden Ezzie pops me, you don't see that as much anymore. And when you do, like what we saw with Josh Morrissey, Captain Sirius right away drops the mitts. And I think it's because maybe the players now don't even know what they're looking at anymore. They don't even know what's legal, what's not. And instead of just going to their teammate and saying, hey, you know what, you should have kept your head up there, now they get into it. And that part I don't really understand. Why does every nice, clean hit need to be scrutinized now by the league and by the media and by the players on the ice that end up fighting about it?
Exactly, Joel. And a clean hit is a clean hit. And, you know, we played the audio clip at the beginning of the segment of Josh Morrissey's hit on Vinny Hinostroza, and Morrissey was called for charging. And we talked about it when we had our next show. And, you know, I said it wasn't charging. That was a clean body check. So as far as I'm concerned, it has to be a concerted effort by the NHL, the NHLPA, and the referees to acknowledge that clean body checking is still allowed in the game.
I don't disagree with anything either of you guys have said with regard to the fact that it is ridiculous that every clean hit gets met by somebody else coming in to beat up the hittee.
I think it's only open ice.
Or the hitter, as the case may be.
It's only open ice, really.
So would you be in favor of Scott Stevens type hits where the player is maybe is admiring the pass or, you know, re-entering the lexicon of the game?
Well, we just saw it the other night, Chris Russell on Tyler Mott. Wasn't that it? Where he just kind of picks up the puck and boom, right there, the D-man's right, and tease him up.
Well,
right.
hits drills still have to be clean. I mean, the hitting from behind, the blindside hitting, you know, all of that type of stuff. I mean, you know, there's no place in the game for that, and you should be penalized or suspended if the NHL Department of Player Safety, you know, deems that there should be a suspension. But clean body checking, I mean, if it's, you know, shoulder to shoulder or shoulder and it gets up into the head a little bit, open ice or up against the boards, like Dustin Byfuglien on Mark Stone, that's a clean hit last year.
It's 100%.
There's nothing wrong with that.
And
that plays a key role in the game. And what is that role in the game? Well, it makes other forwards on the ice, you know, make sure that they're paying attention when Buff is on the ice and he's saying, okay, you want to score a goal tonight? Well, I'm going to put you on your bum and you're not going to score because I'm going to make sure that I'm defending you. It's part of defending in hockey, right?
But I think people get seduced by how the person receiving the hit goes flying because a nice, clean, open ice hit will usually, you know, a scrum ensues, sometimes even a fight ensues. A nice, clean hit against the boards, what happens? Usually there's no fight.
Yeah, for the most part, nothing. Because it doesn't seem to ever have as big of an impact.
Yeah.
Because until you see somebody go flying and really
exactly.
and be hit so hard that they leave their feet.
So people get seduced by seeing that person go flying. And all of a sudden, I got to get in here. When really everybody's looking at it saying, that looks pretty good to me.
But Joel, if the player goes flying, but it's a clean hit, I mean, then you got to get back up. If it turns out that you're injured and it was on a clean hit, well,
I know, but
it was clean.
But that's just not what we're seeing.
Right.
That's not the trend. You're seeing right away when a guy goes flying off a clean hit, there's going to be some flying paraphernalia.
Yeah, players have to be able to, even though today's NHL is much younger, Drew, and there's more of an emphasis on speed and skill, players have to be able to accept a clean hit and the teammates have to be able to accept it as well and not necessarily retaliate.
Do you think players are less reticent to deliver a big hit than they used to be?
I think some guys are. I mean, some players that's their game. I mean, a guy like Milan Lucic or Dustin Byfuglien or, you know, we mentioned Adam Lowry. I mean, these types of players, Dustin Brown, guys that Radko Gudas we just saw on the Philadelphia Flyers. I mean, these guys, that's their bread and butter. I mean, they're not going to ease off from a big hit.
And so you think that's going to lessen at this point in time?
I think the NHL has to be more consistent with how they penalize body checking. And I think right now there's a gray area, and it's too gray for my liking.
Fair enough.
Yeah, perhaps, I guess, with the way the league is getting younger than we've seen it probably in our lifetime, you know, where most teams are relying on youth and the young players are coming in and having an instant impact, maybe some of these players are the same ones that grew up without necessarily that mindset where You get hit open ice, and it's a clean hit. Keep your head up. Maybe they've grown up for the past 10, 15 years with that. You hit me like that, my teammate's going to come after you.
And I realize,
they
Joel,
probably
with
have because they're that young.
Yeah, whereas the other mindset, us, like we grew up watching, we grew up playing with, where it's not the case. You get rocked, unless you get really an elbow to the lips or something. You get rocked, usually somebody just says, hey, keep your head up. Sometimes even a ref says, oh, keep your head up, kid.
And the NHL and the NHLPA, I understand it. They want to protect their players. And, you know, with all that we know about concussions and head injuries and all that, I understand that. But the fact is, body checking is still a huge part of the game. And you have to allow players to be able to body check cleanly because, until we move away from that completely.
Which we hopefully won't
because it's North American hockey.
Sure.
You have to be able to accept that and understand that.
That's it for this Tuesday evening edition of NHL This Week. Thanks to everybody who joined us at this late hour. Big thank you to our guest, Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News, and Kevin Faulness on the Minnesota Wild Radio Network. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter, @illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and as I mentioned, all your Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is available at illegalcurve.com. Big props for producer Rory behind the board doing a great job. For Joel Marcoux, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday afternoon and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show at 1 p.m., we wish you good night and good luck.